All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck Nicks? What's going on? It's Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. I know that the sound is a little bouncy. I know that the room I'm in has a bit of bounce to it, but this is where it has to be done. I'm not home. I'm away. I'm in New Mexico. I've been here for several days, probably the longest trip I've taken back home in a bit. How are you doing? What's going on with you? Everything all right? Today, I'm going to talk to Neil Brennan. Now, look, Neil Brennan's been on in the past, okay? There was this one episode we did a while back that he insisted that we do not air it. We had a fight about that. It was something about how I interacted with him. And, you know, I understand it. I understood it in time. I don't think he was wrong. It's weird what you do understand in time and in retrospect. You know, you behave a certain way and you don't think there's anything necessarily that bad about it, or you kind of dig in and say, like, no, that's not true or whatever. And then, you know, after, you know, 5 years to 40 years to maybe 50 years go by, you're like, you know, maybe I was kind of an asshole. Maybe I did behave badly. Man, what can I do about it now? Not much. Own it, accept it, make amends where possible. But we worked through all of that, and we did it actually on a live episode of WTF in, it was way back. It was like episode 287. And then he came back when he did his special Three Mics. He finally decided to come back and do another full WTF talk, and that was on episode 917. That one he was okay with it. This one, this particular episode today is a little different. It's more like it's one of those episodes where it's just two comics, two friends just hanging out, talking about life, talking about our problems, talking about his new Netflix special, which is called Crazy Good, Neil Brennan, Crazy Good, which he talks about life and his problems. And there's a sort of interface, an interaction, a symbiotic thing. I don't know if it's necessarily always proactive, but we've sort of grown to know how we engage, and it's pretty deep. There's a lot of similarities, so this is a good conversation. It's a thoughtful fucker. Thoughtful fucker, that Neil. Sorry, my chair's making noise. This week, I'm in Montclair, New Jersey on Thursday, May 2nd at the Wellmont Center, Glenside, Pennsylvania, near Philly on Friday, May 3rd at the Keswick Theater, and Washington, D.C. on Saturday, May 4th at the Warner Theater. Then I'm in Munhall, Pennsylvania, outside Pittsburgh on May 9th at the Carnegie Library Music Hall, that haunted place. Cleveland, Ohio on May 10th at the Playhouse Square. Detroit, Michigan on May 11th at the Royal Oak Music Theater. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for all my dates and links. And those links will take you right to tickets. Yeah. And you can come. You never know when this is going to be the last one. Obviously, I haven't made any specific announcement, but because of the shooting of this TV show I'll be doing for Apple with Owen Wilson, I'm going to move some dates. And there's a possibility I'll be moving them till after the election. And that possibility, because some of those dates are in the South, I've had to tell my manager, my booking agent, to, look, we'll see what happens in November. And if it's still safe, if the divided nature of our country hasn't gone to such an extreme where there might be, you know, entry checks at certain states, I will see how that unfolds. Well, everybody will see how it unfolds. And it's sort of a pressing thing, isn't it? I mean, I've kind of detached in a way. I mean, I read the news, but I'm just trying to maintain some stability around what I can and can't do things about. You know, it's just it's an awkward time politically. It's just everyone's sort of, you know, waiting for the right guy to die. And that's a bipartisan thought. I don't know if I've said it before. But, you know, that's the other thing that's happening with the age thing. You get to this age. And again, I'm not old, but I am on the other side of a lot of things. And you're sort of like, well, you know, I made it through a lot. I guess I'll soldier through this for as long as I can and see what happens. Hopefully it doesn't happen at the hands of an ideologically driven lunatic or force of some kind. And maybe I'm being paranoid, but maybe I'm not. So being here in Albuquerque with the old man and spending time with him, it's just, it's weird. There's weird moments because, you know, I got to be honest with you, and I've talked about this before, that you know, I think there a lot of my ability to see life comedically and certainly through the lens that I see it through is because of the way I connected with my father. He was erratic, sometimes angry, sometimes distant, sometimes absent entirely, needy in a way, and intrusive. Were the good qualities. But he, you know, he was engaged with life. I mean, there's an excitement to mania that makes you, you know, excited when you're a kid. You know, if it's not directed at you in an angry way, but if it's sort of like, you know, hey, let's go build a thing. Let's go. You know, whatever he got obsessed with. You know, whether it was dogs, cars, skiing, hats, who knows? The intensity of focus and excitement when someone is manic and they're your dad. You know, it gives you, you know, it makes you feel alive. And that was sort of how I was wired. And then when they're sad and needy and completely draining emotionally, then, you know, that's how I was wired as well. And then, you know, my mother was just off trying to, you know, not eat. But now as time goes on, you know, with him fading out, I find that, you know, he still knows me. He's got, you know, certain memories that are odd and certain memories, you know, large memories are just gone, but certain other ones, like, you know, people's faces, people's names, you know, what he did with somebody, where he was, you know, born, and that, yeah, you know, it's very peculiar what stays and what doesn't. But we were actually had that moment, you know. Well, I mean, I make jokes. I guess that was the point I was trying to make. He still registers everything, and you know, I was at his house with his wife, and his wife said we just took him to the doctor, and he's perfectly healthy. And I said, oh my God, how long is this going to go on for? And got a good laugh. That's a pretty dark joke. And my dad got a good laugh out of that. And I guess that's my audience. Got to dig deep. But there have been pretty touching and brutal moments. We were driving down here in the Northwest Valley and literally driving by where, you know, I grew up, where the house was. And I said, do you remember being down here? Do you remember living down here? And my father said, I never lived down here. And I go, yeah, we did. We lived right over there. He goes, no, we didn't. I said, yes. Yes, we did. We lived down here for years. I was mostly brought up down here. He's like, nope. And then we drove around this bend, which was near my house. And back in the day, there used to be a herd of a buffalo that was it was in on a field not far from where I grew up, owned by the Usseries. And everyone knew about it. It was down the S-curve on Rio Grande. There was just buffalo there. And that was unusual. Not a lot of people have pet buffalo, but there was probably about five or six buffalo, big ones, right at the end of my street. And when we drove around that bend, I said, you remember the buffalo? He goes, yep. I'm like, all right. Well, I guess animals stick. You know, I guess, you know, animals, buffalo, hard to forget a buffalo. That stays in your mind. My entire childhood and the life we lived in the house down the street, gone, erased, wiped away. I was thinking about how many decisions I make on a regular basis and how, for me, very few of them are no-brainers. I agonize over pretty much every decision. This is true. But when you're running a business, the no-brainer decisions really help. And when we started running WTF like a business, there was a clear no-brainer. Stamps.com. Not only was it a no-brainer to have Stamps.com as a sponsor, it was a no-brainer to use Stamps.com for all our mailing and shipping needs. It streamlines your operations and makes your business more efficient. That frees up your time to focus on the bigger decisions. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running and connect with every major online marketplace and shopping cart seamlessly, which is great if you sell stuff online. Make that same no-brainer decision that more than 1 million other businesses have already made with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code WTF for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the homepage, and enter code WTF. All right. So here's what happened when I came out here, because as I said, it feels like I am slowly in the process of returning home, and I hope alive. But it feels like that's kind of gelling in my mind as a future decision, just because my thoughts about being here shifted. There was a time I was coming here and I was thinking, what the fuck am I going to do here? And then I thought, well, why don't you just do what you do everywhere else? Everyone's got their patterns. You've got these small little circles of life that you run around in. Occasionally you get out of them. I guess that's called a vacation or something you have to do for a family member or friend that you're annoyed by, but pulls you out of your patterns. And lives are relatively small sometimes when you really think about, you know, what you do on a day-to-day basis. And now my thinking is shifting. You know, I'm starting to think, like, what wouldn't I do here? Aren't I getting to that point where I can just hang out, walk around, you know, go walk along the ditches and, you know, go up to the mountains, go up to Santa Fe, hang out, look at art, think about things, talk to friends. Can I just do that where I grew up, where I'm wired, where my heart and spiritual sense of self, whatever that may be, and psychology is sort of integrated into this landscape? It's very weird driving around these streets, because like I always drove around these streets and it's very familiar. It feels, it's beginning to really feel comforting and grounded. So I guess here I am, just selling myself and telling you there will come a time where I will return here dead or alive. Am I going to come back here dead? That's a good question. What am I going to do with my body? What are they going to do with it? Decisions, decisions, decisions. So I get here, I'm flying out on Southwest, and who's there waiting? Tim Heidecker. The lovely and amazing and talented Tim Heidecker is in the airport. He's coming out here to shoot something. They're shooting a lot of stuff here. He's doing a movie with, I guess, Marlon Wayans, who I like, who I have a good time with, who I did a movie with. But me and Tim kind of flew together, got to talking, hung out a bit, and then, you know, he's staying down the street. And that was fun. So I knew Tim was in town. And then I decided to sort of contact this small comedy club here called Dry Heat Comedy Club, which operates out of the Box Theater. And I was like, hey, you know, maybe I should come down and do a set. You know, if I'm going to return home, it might be nice to have a place to work out occasionally. So on Friday and Saturday night, I went and did sets at this small club. That's part of it's in the annex of the Box Theater, which is an improv theater. Good audiences. You know, 40 or 50 people just working on the stuff, staying engaged. I need to stay engaged. I might need to stay engaged in the future. But it was nice. It's a nicely run little operation with a lot of local comics. Saw some of the local cats, some good, some almost good. But that's the way it is. It was weird being in a room where you kind of like, you know, it's kind of it's trench comedy. You're just in it. You know, it's not like this is a show business town. But it was a nice venue. Good audience, nice vibe. And then, you know, Tim wanted to go eat over at the Los Poblanos, you know, where I eat all the time and stay, you know. And I was like, all right, spend some quality time with Heidecker. He even came to the second night of the comedy with me. Yeah, it's right. It's just going to, I'm going to move back home at the point where it just becomes, you know, show business adjacent. And then all the people I kind of know or I've interviewed will actually be right here in my hometown with me. Yeah, that'll be nice, right? I don't know. So look, Neil Brennan. You know, I knew Neil when he was a kid. Way back, I started comedy with his brother, Kevin, back in the day. I remember when Neil was a door guy at the Boston Comedy Club, and I think the first time that he got mad at me during that interview is because I still saw him as that, despite all his success. But right now, he's doing great comedy, and he's kind of evolved a lot of as a person, puts a lot of work into himself, as do I, kinda. You know, self-awareness comes more as you start to break down. But this was one of those conversations where clearly Neil and I are, you know, definitely on a different level of communication than we used to be. And it's pretty nice. It's intense. It's deep. It can be exhausting for, I think, probably both of us. But it is, you know, we do like each other, which is good. His Netflix special, Neil Brennan, Crazy Good, is available now. And this is me talking to Neil back in the garage. Have you ever owned something that inspired you to up your game? Well, for me, honestly, it's my stereo system. For years, I've wanted this stereo system. And then at some point, I realized, like, hey, you're saving money, buy it. So I got a pretty top-of-the-line, tube-driven stereo system. It has changed my life. It's not only great for listening to music, it's great for me to sit there with my guitar while I jam or just rock out. Because when we own exceptional things, they inspire us to do exceptional things. Just like the all-new Lexus GX. It has an exceptional capability that will have you seeing possibilities you never knew existed. Its advanced technology and luxurious interior mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Available dynamic sky panorama glass roof. Available front row massaging seats. Available 33-inch all-terrain tires. And available multi-terrain select system for off-road driving. Ability. Any of these options will help you take your Lexus GX to the limit, just like I did with my stereo system. Live up to the all-new Lexus GX, luxury beyond limits. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Sometimes I wish I paid more attention in school, or in some cases, any attention at all. There are probably a lot of things I could have gotten more out of, like literature, and now it's probably not in the cards to go back to school and study the classics. But luckily for us, there's a new podcast called The Foxed Page that dives deep into the best books of all time. This is basically like the best possible college English class, but more relaxed and fun. No pressure of grades or needing to prepare something to say in class. It's only the books you want to read and know about, presented by best-selling author Kimberly Ford. Everything from Cormac McCarthy to Madame Bovary, from classics like Frankenstein to modern hits like Lessons in Chemistry. I love Ireland, but I missed the boat on James Joyce. The Foxed Page has a three-part series on Dubliners, and that's a pretty great starting point. Want to get the most out of what you read? The Foxed Page is for you. Get it now wherever you get your podcast. Okay, so if we're talking about when we're done, like, because I have a thing in my head where I want to be done. There's some part of me that thinks, like, that's what I'm working for, to be done. And a lot of people say, like, well, you can never do that. And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
Maybe. But look, I've been hammering away at this thing. I do a new hour and a half of stand-up every year and a half without always turnover. I haven't stopped working. And it's not that there's diminishing returns. I've done all right for myself. But, you know, when you're at the club and at this comedy club and, you know, the old guys come, there's a cutoff.
Where you, well, yeah, there's a cutoff where it's like, oh, he done got it. Well, he doesn't know what he's... He doesn't... He can't do it anymore.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to be a guy who doesn't... Who can't play anymore.
Well, I'm definitely not that guy, and I'm not that old. But I would like to shift my life to have a little space. And I know that's maybe something I should be able to do anywhere, but it's not happening.
What do you mean by a little space?
The ability to get out of the fucking race. Because even even though I've determined my own life, I am the author of my own fate here, there's no way not to feel competitive. There's no way not to feel like you have to bust your ass all the time. You have to keep up with something. And that just like becomes like, fuck it.
It's also, it gets a little undignified after a while.
How so?
Well, it's just a bit like, am I getting into a fight? Am I driving to get into a food fight?
Yeah.
Just like I'm still caught in this ecosystem of approval. And it's like, dude, you got to just at a certain point be like, I'm good. Instead of it being conditioned on your last hour.
Or comparing yourself to other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm in that. But for the good thing for me is like I've always been to the side of it. You know, I've never been a star.
Right, but close enough. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know,
sure,
close
sure,
enough.
I've talked to all of them.
No. Yeah, but it's more you're
I'm a
you're,
guy.
You're,
I know.
Yes. You're yeah. not on you're not right. You're pretty fucking successful.
Sure. But there's still part of me that, and you know this, because, you know, you somehow...
You of all people, yeah.
Choose to maintain relationships with hugely successful people, uh-huh. which...
Well, that's less and less, but go on.
I can't do it.
That's it's not a whole that other podcast, yeah.
It's not that I have anything against it, but I'm just like, I'm pretty, you know, despite what anyone thinks, I'm a fairly sociable guy. I'm not a bad guy. Mm-hmm. When I'm in social situations, I have a good time and everything. Yeah. But I'm not seeking people. I'm not going to cigar circles in strip malls. I'm not playing golf. Mm-mm. I'm not doing any of that shit.
Yeah, me neither.
But the sad thing is that means that our big social outing is the hallway of the fucking Comedy Store where you can check in, get the pulse, say hi to some people, be excited, be
I
like,
saw
oh,
Bob. I was talking to Bobby Lee and Dimitri Martin last night,
yeah.
who'd never met, which was funny to me.
Yeah.
And Bobby was saying, like, this is where I get my fellowship.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, it is. But a lot of the people there are mentally ill.
Sure. We're all mentally ill. Yeah. I mean, but that, you know, I've known that for years.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite know it as clearly until I realized that when I came up in the 80s, there were a lot of guys that were just, you know, didn't want to be famous. They just wanted to stay ahead of the tax man and child support payments and keep a low profile doing comedy. And I'm like, oh, it's full of criminals. And then I realized, like, it's full of just mentally ill people.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, I'm not, there's nothing to complain about. We have no complaints. Yeah.
Yes, we have no complaints. We complain a lot, but we should have no complaints.
That's the one thing I fucking hate is when people say about my comedy. It's like, you're just complaining. Name me a stand-up.
That's the job. The job is complaining. So it's just a matter of, can you get people on your side about it? How charming are you?
Of course.
Can you hide it?
But also, maybe you don't like my complaining.
Correct.
Maybe you prefer some other types of complaining.
Yes.
Fuckers.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't know, man. So, yeah, we're all mentally ill. But so this turn that you're taking, I read an interview with you somewhere where it was very sort of decisive. I don't know, maybe it was in one of the trades where you were like, I'm going to disappoint my mentally ill fans because I feel better and they're just going to have to take me like this.
Yeah. Well, I'm also, it wasn't that.
Why are you laughing at that? Am I making that up?
Well, it wasn't as confrontational as you're making it. It was more like I did two depression-ish specials.
Yeah.
And then for Netflix. And then I found myself better, felt better through a variety of different things. Ayahuasca, DMT, etc., MDMA. And I didn't want to talk about that
anymore. That's lasting better? This lasting
better. Yes. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. 4 years? 3 years? 4 years? So, I don't know. So far, so good.
Because I'm doing that new bit, which is a great bit, and you know it's a great bit, about the babysitter. About, like, when I was a kid.
Yes.
And it's turned into really a kind of a monsterly, monster kind of odd turn of a bit. It's evolved. But you came up to me, and you're like, oh, you're going full trauma, huh? And I'm like, the fucking, what am I supposed to do?
No, I don't, because it wasn't, you were always kind of toughing it out.
Right.
Right? And I was sort of, the blocks and three mics were more, I'm upset, I'm kind of toughing it out, but I'm in a bit of pain.
Yeah.
And let's explore that. And then I can't even say that I did I did enough therapy and I got through it. I did a lot of therapy. I did a lot of medication, and then I did ayahuasca and DMT, and that flushed me out.
Huh. Well, no, I mean, I'm not. The joke that I'm working through with that bit is that, you know, when you identify the trauma, it's up to you to decide which one had more effect than others. And it's surprising.
Absolutely.
And then it has a good turn at the end. But it doesn't matter. I just thought you were like, oh, you're Mr. Healthy. You're gonna talk to me in that tone. Like, you know, full trauma Marin.
Well, I've Marin'd you. It sounds like I Marin'd you.
Yeah, you like to do that.
I took the mirror out.
You like to do that.
And bounce it.
Oh, yeah. It's really hard to get me. It's really hard to poke at me if you know me well.
Well, you do seem like hard to get, but then it doesn't, and then you forget that it doesn't take much.
No, what happens is I feel it go in, and it lands really hard. Mm-hmm. But over the years, I've gotten pretty good at acting. Like
pretend it didn't.
Yeah. Isn't that our job?
A great job.
It's part of our job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole job is acting like we don't care if they don't laugh at the punchline.
Oh my God.
It's all very casual.
Yeah, but that zone of being of living in the not laughing, that's tough.
Well, yeah, it really hurts. My buddy Bajan says it's like you get into a car accident every night.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you just get used to it.
Yeah.
But it's not. It can't be great for you. And then George Burns lived to be 100. So I don't know.
Wasn't really taking risks, George.
True. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, like, I tanked on the other. I kind of tanked on purpose after. Is it Ian?
Ian Edwards, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he was killing. And I was like, I wasn't in the right mindset. I was in the OR and I just went up and I'm like, you know, and I had that attitude where it was just fuck you. And mm-hmm. I'm going to dick off. Even though that last guy put the work in, mm-hmm. I'm going to dick off. And I felt that I got what I deserved.
They gave you dick off energy?
Yeah, a little bit. And then I left and it was sort of like, why did you do that?
Yeah. Drive home and think about it.
Yeah. Why did I?
Well, that's again, that's.
I'm still thinking about it.
Right. But you've gotten better at not doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't you?
For sure. Yeah.
That
I mean, I don't like
most
doing
of
it.
Your.
Well, sometimes you got to do it to find a new shit. Yeah, but that's not the way you work necessarily.
That's not how I work.
No, it's all written. I watched the entire special, all 58 minutes of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, it's very good. I enjoyed it. I learned things.
What did you learn? Go on.
Don't throw me a softball.
Yeah, am I laying down on the guillotine going, tell me what else you thought of it?
The plan I had was like, here's what I learned. I learned that you feel better, that you know a lot of famous people, and you know how to fuck.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I'm risking the fucking thing is the, again, it's the two sex compliments I've ever gotten.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there'll be lots of blogs about how I'm bad at it.
And, oh, come on.
Who knows?
From people you fucked?
God bless. Hell yeah. And the famous thing is that was more just the I was defending all comedians basically.
No, I got what you were doing, and I liked how I don't know if I liked it, but you were very diplomatic about Joe. You wrote a line, but you know you made sure that it was going to be funny, even though you were saying why are people turning to the clowns for moral guidance?
Yeah, why? How bankrupt are other categories of leadership? Religious,
pretty
corporate,
pretty bankrupt.
Yeah, entirely.
Yeah.
Government. That finally someone said, "Has anyone asked the clowns what they think?" It's the dumbest point of view. That like, what does transgender issues? Has anyone asked the guy who played Rick James what he thinks of?
Well, you don't have to ask him. He's going to guide the cultural dialogue all by himself.
Again, I would argue that's a failure of the culture itself.
But what do you think that is, though? I mean, it is a failure of the culture itself. But I mean, you talked a lot about, you know, TikTok influencers and these people that I'm way out of the loop with. I feel that's the other thing about getting older is I'm like, I'm detaching somehow.
Yeah, you can't care. I don't care. I say I care about TikTok. I don't. I'm not on
but
there.
You do,
I don't
you do enough to observe it.
I do it enough to observe it. I have a girlfriend now. I realize there's no point being on social media.
How long has that been going on for?
A year.
How's that?
It's great. We can talk about it. But it's been, I realize there's no point being on social media if you have a girlfriend because it's just all I'm doing. I was just waiting for girls to hit on me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because I find I don't do that. What I end up doing is I it's become whatever TV was. When we were younger, like mm-hmm. I'm a victim of not so much a short attention span, but I can flip through reels, you know,
sure.
on Instagram and be pretty entertained.
And they're very entertaining.
And be on an emotional roller coaster. You got the animals, people saving the animals. Then you got a guy from another country cooking something. You don't know what it
then
is.
Then you can indulge your jealousy with a stand-up clip of a guy that you don't like killing.
I don't have too much of that. I don't have as much of that as I used to.
Great.
I don't think that way. It no longer is jealousy. It really kind of goes right back to me and going, I gotta tighten up some shit. I'm not like fuck that guy. Oh,
okay. So it's not just, it's more
a means to beat myself up.
Great. Fair enough. That's usable. You can use that. Hit it.
Yeah. I don't know.
So yeah, so that was my point was
dumbfounded by that.
My point was I don't think it should be our responsibility to guide society.
But that's clickbait journalism's fault.
Agreed.
And you know, and also I can't really fathom the tribalization of the business. You know, that you know there is this ideological there's a group of quote-unquote comedy fans who never shut up, and they don't know anything about comedy. And they're just serving as this sort of like this tidal wave of kind of like homogenized thinking around what comedy is and what liberals are and what woke is and all this other shit. And it's just bothersome.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's just like they're an organized trolling entity.
Yeah.
That supports, you know, a handful of comics and a way of thinking about comedy. And they're aggressively trying to take over the country.
Yeah, I would largely agree with that.
And the problem with that is, like, the pantheon of comedy is fragmented and show business is fragmented. And now it's just a fucking free-for-all. And that's why certain people with the loudest mouths who proclaim to have the right way of thinking just take over culture because they're assholes.
I thought about this on the way over here because I had a feeling we'd talk about it. Doesn't it remind you in some ways of Kinison, Dice, and Eddie Murphy, though?
I guess, but the difference was then, you know, show business was only a few blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, everyone was gunning for the same prize.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when Dice did Madison Square Garden, which, you know, he will talk about anytime you talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I love the guy. I really do like Dice. But I mean, that was a big fucking deal.
Mm-hmm.
Here, like, you know, there's people I don't even know playing Madison Square Garden. And you know, no one knows except their fans who they have accumulated on TikTok. So there's no... it's not a hierarchy thing, but the status of it is fragmented. Like
I agree with it, but I would also agree that you've benefited from a bifurcated market.
Did I?
Yeah, I think you benefited from... You're not for everybody, but everyone that was possibly going to like you found you.
Now, that's true. Sure.
You know, which I don't think that's any different.
I'm not
saying... You didn't do the garden, but... You did. I don't. You
yeah,
did
do
the Beacon,
right.
And
sure.
you know you've done like other.
Yeah, I'm not. That's not my complaint. My complaint is that the worst, you know, seem to amass the most. I'm very specifically troubled by the hackneyed and ridiculous idea of anti-woke and like I might get canceled. It's like it's hack.
It's also just entirely untrue.
I know, but it's like this branding thing now.
I agree.
And it's crazy. It's like, that's the edge. I mean, you did jokes in your special. I'm doing jokes now that are profoundly fucked up, dark jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not, you know, advertising.
Right. That's not like... we didn't tag it with like, so come and get me.
Yeah.
There's no, the cops should be here any minute. The woke police, are coming to get me. Yeah. I don't want to play that game in terms of like, I don't want to be Vince McMahon. I don't want to be a wrestling promoter.
Yeah, yeah.
And people that do, you know, enjoy, have fun.
I guess here's the big problem is that there is a certain school of comedy / cultural criticism that is enabling morons to think they're smart. And, you know, I think that's the biggest problem with culture is that there are people that are fundamentally sort of uneducated, not that great at critical thinking or even rational thought, that will believe just about anything if it's delivered to them with enough force and something they can relate to. And then they just move through the world confidently, you know, spouting bullshit and working against the common cause.
Yeah, I guess. Yes, I agree with that. Now, Who's to blame for it is a way longer, more complicated discussion.
Is it?
Yeah, because I think it begins like in, it's like an Adam Curtis documentary where it's like, you want to know the root of this?
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I don't think Adam Curtis would waste his time. If Adam Curtis did that film, it would be about the power and money in conservative propaganda.
Under attack, yeah.
And playing the victim card, but also, making the truth a little slippery and putting forth conspiracy theories as intelligence. It's a huckster's world right now. But I think that a lot, and if I have any empathy about it at all, it's that I do think that a lot of comics are being played to fit in, appropriated by the sort of right-wing momentum.
You think otherwise?
Well, they're making a lot of money. They don't give a shit.
Yeah.
But the whole anti-woke thing is really just a right-wing talking point. It's a wedge issue.
Yeah.
And now there are people that we know who have decided that is their ideology. And I see that as being played.
I would agree. And
but they're making good money.
Yeah.
And that's what's really important.
And I hope the damage isn't
it's going to be
massive
bad.
As you and I think it's going to be.
It's going to be bad, dude. I've shifted my angle on fascism from like identify it, push back to like, hey, it's going to happen. What's your plan?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's with climate change, same thing. It's like you better learn how to swim, get to high ground.
What's your plan? You know, like I know a lot of you are like, I'm gonna leave the country. Like, no, you're not. You're not.
No, you're not. Where are you gonna go?
And here, seek comfort in the fact that there's probably somebody in Russia or Hungary that has your exact job and they're doing okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also where they're not gonna let you in. There's visa rules. We could do it, but the climate change thing is gonna be every border is going to be closed.
When's that going to happen? Am I going to be dead?
I believe, what year is it? 2055, I'm betting.
I should be dead.
We won't have a lot going on. We won't have very full schedules.
If I turn out like my dad, it won't matter what's going on.
It sure won't. ideally.
Did I not know this? Do you have 9 siblings?
Yeah.
I thought it was like 5.
Mm-mm. It's far more serious. Yeah.
Oh, my youngest God.
Youngest of 10.
Because he said that in the special, and like I think I know 3. I thought there was only 5, but
yeah, there's
10.
More where that came from, yeah.
And you're the last one?
Yeah.
It's so funny, like, I was talking to Jimmy Carr about, he's got nothing but good things to say about you.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
But no, I was talking about how, like, you were sort of, yeah, as opposed to, not being a victim, but not being someone who's actively working on themselves in the way you used to, that there was the way you talked about trauma on the special, like, that everyone's got trauma, And I was sort of like, well, this is kind of a new angle for the guy who reads trauma. Like when I see Neil, I'm like, that's trauma in a skin.
Incarnate, yes. That's that guy's 90% trauma. Yeah. I'm trying to be less that. Honestly, I'm trying to be less that. It's not fun. It's not the audience doesn't like it.
What they don't like what?
A guy who reads his trauma. They want a party animal. So I'm trying to just be more I also don't really feel that way anymore.
Right. A party animal.
They want a life of the party. They want a charisma machine.
Not my audience.
Not your audience, not my audience, but I'm saying like most
do
comedy
audiences.
You
want to be the life of the party? Is this the dream?
I wish I had a sunnier personality.
Yeah. We can't do I don't think it's
No, it's too late for us. There's nothing we can do. But I would like to get people who thought I was just trauma before.
And, to see the fun part.
Yeah, the fun part of trauma. And I would like to be more than trauma. And I do mock I'm mocking the kind of monetization of it. I think the issue we're talking about with all of this stuff is monetization.
I have it on a post-it on my dashboard. It just says monetize because when people use that word, how do you monetize your trauma? How do you monetize your pain? How do you monetize your cancer?
Yeah. And there's it's competitive monetization. It's ideological monetization. There's I listen to a podcast that I really like called Conspirituality, right?
Right.
And it's about
that's all of it.
Yeah. And so it's about conspirituality. It's about conspiracy theories and religion and New Age philosophy and all this stuff and sort of debunking it all. And then they do 6 minutes of ads.
Yeah.
For vitamins or whatever, or whatever it's for. And it's a bit like, I don't know, guys, this doesn't seem, again, I'm a fan, but at the same time, do we not see that this is all
the irony?
There's a, yeah, that the there is an underlying hypocrisy or corruption.
But
not like they're selling garbage. I'm just saying, like,
right,
you can make a case that selling anything is selling garbage.
Everybody's part of it.
Yeah. Like, hey, we're gonna show you this grift, but and right after this.
Yeah. The funny thing is, like, some guy got on me because I did a couple vitamin ads for Solgar, which is, you know, old hippie vitamins that I've seen my whole life. Uh-huh. And they sent me a bunch of vitamins. Mm-hmm. And I'll take them. Mm-hmm. I'll take fucking vitamins every day. Mm-hmm. Some guy's like, I can't believe you're selling supplements. I'm like, I'm taking them.
So. Yeah. Does that make any better? I'm in this with you. Yeah. It's like, I direct commercials sometimes and I won't do social media. I won't do Facebook.
I won't advertise anything that's...
Or in gambling. I won't do gambling on my podcast.
Me neither. I won't do dubious things, and I won't do things that I can't sell. I remember we had an incident with the Man Grate many years ago.
Mm-hmm. That, I don't even know what that is, but I know you can't sell it. Sight unseen.
I think I had a hard time with the pube trimmers.
Sure. Yeah. Who would believe that you would ever try?
But it was so funny with the Man Grate, because Corolla is early on, and Corolla was a big Man Grate guy. It's just this piece you put on a grill to cook steak better.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted us. They kept pushing. And we were like, it's not my people.
Yeah.
And they paid for the ads, and I did one, and they called in a panic, like, we didn't sell any. I'm like, we told you that.
Yeah. I could have told you ahead of time.
We just cut them loose.
Yeah.
We didn't penalize them. But the belief thing. Like, I'm back to working this joke I don't know if I used it before, but that's the other thing about doing as much comedy as we do is I'm starting to realize, and you're in the same boat. No kids,
yep.
Small world.
Mm-hmm. I the woman I'm dating has a kid.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's wrinkle. Fucking a new half hour.
It's 5 minutes so far.
Hmm. Good for you.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
Again, I wasn't expecting any of it.
How old the kid?
3 and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you got her, what, right out of the breakup?
Fresh out. I'm walking her through it.
Good luck, buddy.
Yeah. No,
How long did you wait to meet the kid?
About a year.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's correct.
Yeah. So she's a therapist. So we're doing it correctly.
Wow.
Ideally. We'll see. But so far, so good.
Well, the point I was making, and then we'll get back to this, is that, you know, I realize over the course of 3 or 4 specials that the way I think remains fairly constant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do grow and I do reevaluate, but the dialogue, the conversation I've been having throughout my entire career of comedy is roughly within a wheelhouse. It is of a thing.
You could take a joke from any one of your hours and put it in another one. And it wouldn't stick out very much.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe the level of sophistication.
About marriages and
women. Sure.
And I think I've evolved, but it's sort of interesting that you kind of, but everyone does that. I don't know anybody that doesn't continue the conversation.
Somebody, a very famous musician told somebody that, he goes, I have 4 songs.
Right.
That I soup them up. I've changed them, but it's the same basis.
Well, it's like someone was talking to Angus Young about AC/DC. It's like, it seems like he did the same record like 3 times, and he was like, 3?
Yeah.
11.
Yes.
12.
Yes. But it once, and you just have to kind of maybe stay ahead of it.
Yeah. The only shift is, like, you know, unless I just all of a sudden became conservative or something crazy.
Yes. Yes. But people knowing what they're getting, kind of.
The belief thing, though, like, no matter what you know and however anyone talks about religion, like all of us talk about this and we think, and it's really not that big of a deal to take shots at religion anymore. Mm-mm. People are still a little hesitant to take shots at Islam.
Yeah.
But
I don't know why, but keep it up. No, yeah, you're going to get your head chopped off. But
something. I mean, something, like, it is a little scarier.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they actually mean business.
Yeah, I used to say that, you know, you can make fun of Christians because they're kind of built to take a beating.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole premise of
that's the whole thing. Yep.
But the idea is that I've I've brought back, and I don't know if I did it on a special, I should look, but the idea that if you believe in God, you'll fucking believe anything. So once you've opened that door, you got to be kind of vigilant about what goes in and what goes out.
Yeah, I think you did do that joke.
Yeah.
Because I've had that experience where, because of the ayahuasca, I had an experience where I was like, oh, I think I'm in the presence of God, right? Or such a crazy
sure.
Experience. And I do find myself, I won't dismiss things as quickly. I won't embrace them, but I'll be like, you're into crystals? I don't know.
Do you see Scoville's new special?
No.
You should watch it.
Okay.
He's profoundly underrated.
He's very funny, Rory.
But I mean, he's got balls.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I didn't know it. I thought he was a goofball.
No.
I watched his special. I'm like, oh my God. It's just that he's so affable.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
And it's sly. He doesn't.
Right. Like, he doesn't assume an edge.
Yeah.
And he's talking about shit. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
He's like really doing it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
something, man.
Yeah. He's very funny.
He does some good shit about crystals and God and his wife.
Yeah.
And having crystals. He's my wife is a witch.
Yeah. God bless. I just read Carl Jung's autobiography and that he was a witch.
Oh, yeah. He had a good racket going.
You don't buy any of it?
No, I like the Jungian trip. I mean,
I don't like the dream stuff. I don't care for like any those guys were him and Freud. It's just like, yo, fellas, enough with the dreams.
But wasn't he the collective unconscious guy?
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that's pretty big. That's a good idea. That kind of taps into the sort of the big universal hum, the frequency.
Yeah,
the
and
wavelength
big manifestations. Bit. Like there's a story of him and Freud being together.
Yeah.
And Freud being like, I don't know about all this fucking hokum and a thing in the room. Immediately, like, shook.
Sure.
And then Freud was like, what the fuck is that? And then
Jung
says he knew another one was coming and another one came. And he was like, I don't know.
All right, Mr. Wizard.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I don't know.
Well, I can't get into the serendipity thing. I can't do it.
Fine.
Because it's a slippery slope.
Well, Mark, there are some slopes are slippery and some are just slopes.
Yeah. But that's all depending on your mental and emotional grounding. Sure, you can acknowledge the slope, but if your brain is of a certain thing where it's like you're going to start seeing signs everywhere, you got to nip it in the bud.
Yes, and I think another big one is, will you drive there?
Yeah.
Will you drive to participate in it?
No.
That's a big demarcation line.
No, I'm kind of okay with my, you know, slightly guarded fear of opening up too much so I don't lose myself forever. Yeah.
Opening up too much to
whatever
potential energy, forces.
Look, dude, I was at the Comedy Store, you know, in cocaine psychosis on the porch, pretty sure that, you know, what is now the Sunset, that hotel across the street.
Yeah.
You know, the Hollywood, what is it? What's that place called?
The
Hollywood
Montreal.
Tower.
Yeah.
The Hollywood Tower.
Yeah.
That old building.
Yep.
It was gutted when I was a doorman and I thought there was an altar on top and something was going to go down.
Yeah.
I had it all worked out.
Yes. And yes.
But took me years to pull myself back.
Did it really?
Yeah.
How'd you do it?
Well, I got off the blow. I got sober the first time. And it took me years to not go into the Comedy Store and be like, oh, God, it's still here. I don't know. It's just, you know, once you sort of like violently create a neural pathway through lack of sleep and drug use, you know, you gotta kind of shore it up. You gotta fucking
you gotta get some caulk and sand and
fill it in, man.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. I guess my thing is like I had a bit of a thing with that. I had like something, right? And then
what? With what? Oh, the signs thing?
No, just like I did a DMT thing and then I did DMT and
once?
Yeah. That's all I needed. And then it was like the DMT experience, the 25 minutes. And I was in the presence of like the central creation force. And then, you know, slowly but surely your personality come back to human consciousness.
Yeah.
But the problem was about a week later, I had a reactivation. So now I'm just in life and I'm a little bit there as well.
Right.
And that was like, I thought it was 8 months, but it was like a year and a half.
Fucked yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck myself. But came back better. Came back as guy.
You got a new tool to kind of, you know, push that stuff aside to go like, oh, there's the elf.
Well, yeah, no, it didn't even get that bad. Okay, it was good. Just like big. It was, I had a 30 trillion foot view.
Oh, yeah.
Which
yeah.
is too far.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Too far out.
Yeah, so, you're right next to God.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually past it at one point. Don't worry about it. But it did give, I am sunnier as I wanted.
Yeah.
I'm less the personification of trauma. And I'm grateful for having had the experience. But
what? Tell me about the ayahuasca. How many times did you do that?
15-ish.
Jesus Christ. With how much time in between?
I haven't done it in, I did it about over 2 years. So 15 is like basically 7 weekends.
Okay, so.
So it wasn't.
What'd
like,
you get out of that?
Experienced a God force, central creation force, and no, and depression lifted.
What you mean, like
no more antidepressants?
The movie Altered States? Did you become?
I remember Altered States. Yeah, that was sort of silly, right? It was like he became like a caveman,
matter, antimatter caveman. But then he got back to the origin of life.
Yeah,
and he was like, no big deal.
Is that what?
Yeah, he'd been pursuing it his whole fucking career, and he fucking went out there, was there at the beginning of it all, and he's sort of like, it's nothing.
Yeah, I didn't get that conclusion. I just got a better sort of minute to minute state to be in.
But just where does it leave you spiritually? Like you're like there's something.
Yeah, I believe there's something, but I don't need you to not have sex certain way. I don't. There's no rules.
It doesn't
around
require.
It.
You don't have a definition.
No, I don't have a definition.
Right.
And religions don't seem, they seem like
right.
versions
but you're
of,
like, you know,
of a basic tenet yeah. that like there is a central creation force that I experience. I don't give, just, you know, don't kill me.
Yeah.
That's my.
You know, but, there's something and you know that we're fucking it up.
I don't even know if we're fucking it up. And again, even the term no, I think I experienced it.
Yeah.
But maybe it's no different than the altar on the top of the Sunset Tower.
Right.
Does look like an altar, though. I will give you that.
Dude.
That's going to be a tough one to get over.
Yeah. And when it was gutted, I was sort of like, they're building it.
Yeah, of you course. Know? Yeah.
And now it's just sort of like, they got a pretty good restaurant.
Yeah, yeah. The maitre d', it's kind of sort of a scene. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, all right. So you're loaded up that way.
Loaded up's a big word, but yeah.
But what, now, tell me the downside of veganism.
I don't think there is one.
There isn't? Because, no. I mean, I'm well over a year now
mm-hmm.
vegan.
You look, hey, I didn't want to say anything. You look really skinny.
Do I? Thank
yeah,
God.
I know.
I came back from the road, and I really, sometimes you go vegan on the road, and you just get these places where.
Just go to Chipotle. That's my advice.
Yeah. I don't mind the vegan places.
No.
But, like, sometimes there's, like, vegan places where you're like, wow, look at that. And with these onion rings. It took me four days to recover from these onion rings.
They were so good.
They were good, but they were big, and they were filled with batter, and it was just fried, and just fucked me up.
Yeah. There's some places where some places vegan food is like punishment.
Yeah.
And the decor is punishment.
Yeah.
And they went all natural with the tables, and it feels like a soup kitchen.
No, I like those places. I like hippie places. It's
yeah.
the places that are trying to get regular eaters in there by making, you know, facsimiles or really decadent vegan food. It just grosses me the fuck out sometimes. Like, I can't eat at Crossroads that often.
I eat there all the time. It's too
it's like rich.
Too mainstream for you?
No, it's just very
too
rich.
Too corporate?
No,
oh,
no.
Too many rich people.
No. The sauces and stuff.
Oh, the
literally, the food is a little rich. Like, okay. I like more basic shit.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to be good, man. There's a lot of options.
Bones, so it's okay for your bones?
So far.
Do you take a supplement? B12?
Yeah. I take all kinds of supplements.
What do you take?
I take, I literally just did my pill packs before I got
yeah,
here.
Yeah, what is it?
B, D, iron, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Just,
okay.
You know, the ones.
Yeah.
But I didn't for 15 years.
How do you get your omegas?
I don't know. I don't know that. Pumpkin seed oil.
Ah.
Mm.
That's all right.
Yeah.
I've been doing walnuts. Walnut
okay.
oil.
Yeah. Great.
I just want to make sure everything. Huh?
Yeah, you're going to be good. Get tested. Get your blood checked.
No,
you
I did.
Do
I'm all right.
Yeah, it's all overstated. all the downside and like, you're going to, what about your protein? Don't worry about
it. I'm not worried about protein. I can figure that out.
Yeah.
But I was wondering about like a few of the vitamins you can't get in a vegan diet. It's hard.
I don't know if you want to ask the embodiment of trauma.
If, B12. B12 is the one.
Mr. Trauma, if you want to. I mean, I do drops, I think.
Yeah, me B12. Too. Yeah, you spray it. I'm good.
Look at us.
We're okay, man.
Yeah, man. So
how do you feel about your new special?
I like it.
I think you dressed well.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
That's a challenge for us.
Yeah, no, I gotten some blowback on it, but Jimmy Carr wasn't a
Did
fan.
Did he see your last one?
You didn't like that one?
It's okay, just the shirt, right? Just the shirt with the mic on. I could see the mic clipped on.
Well, when you use a sound person, I could get into it. They didn't, it's fine.
No, they give you the love for the backup. And then, like, anytime I wear a lav, it's going to fuck me. It's going to fall out of my pocket. It's going to pull on my shirt funny.
I literally can't even talk about what a nightmare that was because it's the lav. If you look at my block special, the microphone's pointing away from me.
I know, dude. I know.
It's pointing away from me. And also, that was the only source for laughs was from that microphone.
What?
So I can't even talk about what a nightmare that was. Thank you for the dressing compliment. I'll take that if that's all I get from you. And what did I know celebrities. No, I fuck.
And I said the jokes were good. I said the whole thing's good.
Thank you.
And I thought, there were so many I hadn't seen, and I've watched you work on this stuff for a while.
Yeah.
I thought it was very strong. I liked it. I am always impressed by the craft.
Thank you.
And the laughs. I got some laughs. I thought about things differently.
Great.
Across the board. Great. All good, but I'm just dealing with the things that I deal with, which is like, I think I finally, nailed, dressing properly on television my last special. And that's after 35 years. Well, by the way,
it's like
years.
The thing you wear all the time.
Yeah, but
was it a jean
little
shirt,
nicer.
A denim shirt?
It was like a leather shirt. I hired a stylist for the first time.
There you go. 350?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't care. He came over.
Well, the question that somebody said, like, what do you want to, I sent it to him, they're like, what do you want to know? And I said, will I get a cultural promotion from this? That's kind of all you want to know.
Who asked you that?
What do
you
Somebody asked me, what kind of notes are you looking for? And I was like, I just want to know if it's going to work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, cultural promotion. That's interesting. So,
like, will I get a bump up in venue size and relevance and regard?
Yeah.
And this is another thing that I'm thinking about in terms of, like, why am I still pursuing this?
Dude, you're talking and preaching the choir. Like, I mean, I know, and I talk about it on stage now, I'm like, I know that I'm relevant to the people that care, but there is that point where, like, and I do all right, I sell well, but there is that idea that, and you're closer to it than me usually, that there's this unexplainable bump.
Yes.
And I don't think it can be manufactured.
Mm-mm.
It's just some people's personalities interface.
At the right time.
But they interface.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are good at what they do.
Yeah.
If they can hold on to their place. And the guys and some of the guys I know, they can hold on to their place. And I don't know if it's because they're relevant, but if it's just the cultural bump, I mean, sometimes I just don't think I look right to be.
Well, this is another thing where I'm going. So you've only known me 30 years. So you've known me 30 years, and I read traumatized, right?
Yeah.
So for an audience, I think there's some version of that. I read washed out or whatever. Like, or it's like some people walk on stage and the audience goes, "Our prince is here."
No, when I go on stage, it's like, "Here we go."
No, exactly. Yeah, it's Colin Quinn's joke about good-looking people and bad-looking people. When good-looking people walk into a room, people are like, "Thank God you're here." And when bad people walk in, they go, "What?"
Yeah, now what do you ruin the party?
Yeah, what?
Yeah.
So I think you and I are more in the what category, and I'd like to be in the finally he's here. Hey, everyone, quiet down. He's here.
Yeah, I think I'm.
And I don't know if it's possible.
Yeah, I think I'm letting that go.
Yeah, and I also. It becomes easier to let it go when
you're tired.
And you've taken the ride, so to speak, in terms of riding your popularity.
Well, it hit me after End Times Fun. You know, like I took real risks.
That was on the Netflix one. Which one was that?
It was a Netflix one. It was with the big sort of Pence blowing Jesus at the end. Like, I hit all the notes
right.
of all my heroes, you know, that built me, and I took chances, and it was tight as fuck. It was the best thing I'd ever done.
Right.
And it came out right as the pandemic began, which was good because I right. kind of called it.
Right.
And, you know, I was like, that's the best I can do. And if I don't get that cultural bump from that, then I'm just, you know, this is where I am.
Ian Edwards said about this special that's coming out.
Yeah.
He said, if this doesn't work, quit.
But
not literally, but you know what I mean.
No, but I think about that all the time. You know, what do I owe the world? Like, because like the special after that, my last one with Lynn mm-hmm. from Bleak to Dark, that was, again, the last two, best I can do. Like, I can't. Yeah.
Different styles.
Yeah.
As well.
But now I'm sort of, it's me, but like one's a little deeper. But Lynn directed End Times Fun, and then, you know, she was dead for the next one. Mm-hmm. So they were all kind of under the umbrella of her power. But the only thing I started to think about is like, maybe I gotta be a little cuter. Can be cuter?
Because of after?
No, I'm
after,
just talking about the now? Cultural bump, like just in general.
Oh, no, maybe. I know. You kind of go, does that outfit work? Like, shit, my glass frame.
Is it all?
Yeah. The background.
We're crazy.
The laughs that I'm getting. Should I talk about crypto? Like, how current should I be? And when does it look like I'm chasing a sound? You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
like I actually think about them. Like, I should do a joke.
Well, you're one of those guys, though. Like, and I turns out I am too. Where it's sort of like with Bleak to Dark, I'm like, you know, I got to do some physical comedy for real, and I got to beat it out properly.
Yeah.
So that bat bit, you remember that bit? You're not going to look at a bat and think like I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
And in that whole the timing of all that, like I had to figure that out.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't want that to look stiff, you know,
like,
because there are some dudes, they do physical comedy and you're like, yeah, he worked that out.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. But you did the
it worked beat, good.
It worked.
Because I hit myself beat, 3 times.
Because the pause was good.
Yeah.
The pause, you know,
but you got to, well, you got to, well, here's the problem though. Like if we, you and I are thinking about this, like, I don't know what you do on the road. You probably do fine. But like what, right?
Yeah. I mean, you say it like it's bad.
Well, I'm just talking myself, because I do fine too.
Yeah.
I do
well,
good.
Again, right. But think about how well you used to do, which was not that well.
But then no
one
knew me.
Incredibly well.
No one, and I'm funnier.
You're right. Yes. I'm not insulting you in any way. I'm just saying, I'm not taking that away.
My point is that clearly for both of us, whatever we have is not enough.
Yes, for the. Did I tell you?
So how are we doing better then? Tell me about your recovery.
Right. Yeah. Well, what do you mean?
Well, if we're still looking, if the external validation,
at least now we're looking to this idea of like, I'm not going to take this shit anymore. Like at a certain point, my pride's going to kick in, and I'm going to be like, hey, audience, I'm as ambivalent about you now as you are about me.
Yeah.
It's right back at you. And then what do you fill your time with?
Yeah. But
and also, Mark, we're doing better than 97% of comedians. The problem is no one looks down. Everyone looks up.
I know. And this conversation, you know, for some people is going to be like, oh, poor Neil.
I totally agree. And that's what people, I've been accused of that before. And I just got gratitude 3 months ago. And now I actually think about my life the way other people have looked, said like, what do you, your life's unbelievable. And I've been like, no, you don't get it. And sort of poo-pooing it. And it's like, now I actually think my life is unbelievable.
As do I. And my producer has to remind me about how great we have it. But there is this thing that you seem to have as well. And I totally believe that. I am grateful and I know I'm doing good work. But like when it comes right down to it, you know, after I did that HBO special, you know, which did well for them and mm-hmm. critically, you know, won the best comedy special in a lot of different publications and stuff. You know, when I want to do a new special, there's no sort of like, oh, sure, of course, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like, we'll have a look. I'm like, what do I got to do? Yeah, I'm not a bankable commodity.
Oh, that you want. Well, that's what I'm talking about with the promotion, where it's
right.
Like you want and I want a frenzy.
Or just to say, like, we trust this guy. Yes. He did a great special. Yes. He's one of our guys. But we're not, clearly we're not algorithm shifters.
Correct. Yeah, I don't think so. And then what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, what do you do when you're not, you're good, great, whatever adjective you want to put on it, or as you would call it, fine. What do you do in that situation when you're selling out
so sensitive
1,000 seaters, 2,000 right. seaters, once, twice,
like, what do we want?
I agree. And also, do any of the people on the floor above us seem completed? Me and Jimmy Carr went to see U2 in Vegas, which was a full middle age. Yeah. We got the middle aged man package. Sure. And
you didn't have any hookup?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we talked to Bono and we were having a conversation, and Bono said, "If I were a whole person, I wouldn't do this."
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that so there's
that's uplifting.
but that's exactly right. Like, what is this thing that we're going for? The thing I think we're going for is this inner completion, and I think we're never going to get it from comedy. Wait. I think we've had moments of it.
Wait, are you saying it's an inside job, Neil?
I think that's what I'm getting at. And as corny as gratitude is, it's helped me a lot with a lot of it.
It helps me too. And I do have a lot of acceptance around what we're talking about. And oddly, you know, like during the pandemic, when no one was doing comedy, I felt great.
Yeah, me too.
My thought was, and I don't know if I told you this, my first thought was like, maybe I'm all better.
Yeah. Well, it's easy to be all better when no one's doing better.
I know. That's exactly the rest of it. Yeah.
That's the second, the verse you cut.
No, I put that in there.
Yeah, but I'm saying that, yes, it is. Yeah, but what do we do when other people are outdrawing us or they're
I know who I am. Yeah. Like, I'm opening my sets with that. I'm not an arena act. You know, I could probably do one arena and bus people in. Mm-hmm. And the other one is I'm not a casino act. And it's not that I don't have the skill set. It's just that my fans are not going to be in Vegas on purpose.
You know, I'm in the fucking exact same boat.
Like, if they're there and they see my poster at the Wynn, they're going to be like, that's a lot. You know what I mean? Like, isn't he coming near us? Because, like, we're just starting to get into this.
I don't want to see him. Like, we'll go see, like, Adele.
We're having
something.
A good time.
Yeah.
You know?
Why would I? Yes. So what do you do? What do you think the end will be?
Well, here's what I know about myself, and I think you should know it too, is that, you know, I'm a real fucking comic, and there nobody can take that away from me. And the work we do is respected by our peers, and we know we're doing the best we can do. And we're also intelligent comics. We're people that are talking about things that aren't necessarily seen as entertaining. We're doing the job, at least I am, that I thought I should be doing. You know, I was never, you know, just an entertainer. You know, I was never a feel-good kind of performer, really. And I imagine that's in me, but I don't seem to want to make a shift to lighten my load because it's just not my nature. So I have accepted the fact that no one is saying about me, that guy got an easy go. That guy doesn't deserve this. That guy doesn't deserve that. No one can say that about me.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, I was someone, you know.
That's where you and I differ. Okay. I could talk about what I think people think about me endlessly, but it's, yeah. But I don't think it's, I think it's, I yeah.
The funny talking. Thing is about you, though, is that, you know, you're so, like, meticulous about your approach. And no one can write jokes like you. And your presentation is good and you're funny. The thing is like, whatever anybody says because of any of our struggles, it's just that thing you're talking about. There's a part of us that is heavy.
I know. That's as you were thinking of it, as you were saying this, I thought you and I, the best we can hope for is a lighter heavy.
Right. Exactly.
Like, I can do DMT and seem like, and talk about fucking and all that stuff. And then,
yeah.
But it comes down to what's a more fun version of our spirits.
But we also do the thing where we want to, you know, make people look at things differently. You know, we're up there talking about smart shit.
Yeah.
And that's really not everyone's cup of tea.
It's most people's.
I know. Yeah. Exactly.
People don't like tea.
Yeah. These are coffee.
They want. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they want iced tea. They want sweet tea, and they want Coke, and they want. Yeah. Yeah.
Ultimately, we just have to, you know, or I do. I have to have some self-acceptance around it because I don't, like, I'm old already. And, like, you know, but the cultural bump, I like that image because, like, that's across the board. Because you always think, like, when I get offered an acting role, and I have a sparsity mindset because of comedy. Like, I didn't grow up poor, but because it took me so long to find any success in show business, I think I'm like, oh, I got to do it. Because mm-hmm. then but now, like, it's sort of like, even if it's a huge show, you're like, no one's going to see it.
Oh, it's you know, all, yeah. it's all like being, I remember asking somebody if they would do a show 20 years ago. I was like, would you be like Bill Gates's clown?
Yeah.
Like if you could just, Bill Gates pays you $5 million a year to just be his clown.
Yeah.
And that's not that dissimilar from being on Apple TV.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like yeah. You're basically you're Tim Cook's clown, and yeah. like unless you're Ted Lasso or on Ted Lasso, no one's yeah. watching your show.
But so I think we got to give. I guess we got to give ourselves a break, and you know, think about that inside jobness.
No, I'm impressed with. I'm thankful for the life I've been given.
Yeah,
like it's unbelievable. I am grateful. I do think like what I was able to do going from like writing for somebody, writing with somebody to having my third Netflix special.
Yeah, you did
and
it.
Like, no matter what anyone says, like even thinking about the naysayers or the haters, it's like, what are you going to say, man? What, how? So still you watch this and why is there still a but? If there's any but, make it like, maybe I'm not the best performer, but I'm like working at the edge of my abilities.
Sure. But also, you got to get the worst naysayers are the ones you make up.
Yeah, of course.
Your head.
Of course.
And they don't even exist, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know when somebody tweets
science
at me.
Science fiction.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, if you have that part of you that just wants to keep you in this place.
Yes. Yeah.
Because that's what you grew up with, and that's how you drove through life. You know, at some point, you got to be like, all right, just give it a rest.
It's also, yeah, it's scanning for threats. And then when they're, we've eliminated, you and I have eliminated most threats.
Well, yeah, but that's
professionally and personally.
It's our
and
makeup.
Physically. And now we're still,
yeah,
we're
ready.
Still looking for yeah. them.
And preemptively.
So so now we're hallucinating them.
Yeah.
We're hallucinating
and
threats.
And we're still approaching every interaction with a certain guardedness and hostility.
Yeah, like I'm still reacting to how Comedy Central treated me in 2002. Well, you know what I mean?
But don't you think you're still reacting to 9 fucking siblings?
Sure. Sure. Sure I am.
They're all gone. They're old, and some of them.
I know, but they still. I'm still not the funniest one in the family to a lot of you know or whatever. I don't even I don't even think I'm.
No,
reacting
it's just
to
the
that.
Vigilance. The vigilance.
Yes,
that's at the core of
it's
our personality.
It's the core vigilance of you don't believe in me, do you?
Yeah, or don't fuck with me. You're gonna fuck with me.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's. I think that might be yours is don't fuck with me, and yours is mine is don't. Underestimate me and don't belittle me.
But I can take the fucking now. Like I have the humility to be on stage and fail or get one-upped by an audience member or whatever. And I can work with that. I can be in that space. I can be in that space easier on stage than in life. And the weird thing with me is though, if I don't do a show for a week or two, I don't think I can do it anymore. Like, I'm literally like, do I even know how to do it?
No, it's the only job in the world like that, where you go, I don't think I can be a doctor.
Yeah, and as soon as I get on stage.
I don't think I can do medicine anymore. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I live here.
Yeah, it's not even, I don't think I can be a person at my house.
Exactly.
That's the part that.
So how's the relationship changed you? Better? A therapist? So that
she's a therapist. It's changed me in that I'm more... Well, the DMT and the ayahuasca changed me to make me more available to be loving and be caring and be less
In a heartfelt way.
Yeah.
Not in an act as if way.
No, not in a I have to do this.
Or like I'm gonna, you know, I know how to behave.
Right.
Even if it's
contrary. Be super boyfriend. I can perform boyfriend.
Yeah. Right.
I don't need to perform boyfriend. I actually want to see her. I want to talk to her. I like talking to her. I like hearing about her day. I like hearing about her perception.
Yeah.
And again, which isn't to say like, and this is the first woman I've ever, that's not even the case. It's just the easiest and in my case, it's the most acceptance that she's shown me.
Yeah, that's great.
That's been the biggest, my biggest sort of hang up was not feeling like what I was okay.
Oh, that's the fucking worst. Because then that leads to like, you know, constantly feeling like you're being fucked with or condescended.
But I think there was also I think most of the problems I had in relationships were the woman thinking I wasn't as into her as she was into me.
Mm.
And then that's the first domino. And then everything from that, accusations.
They clearly misunderstood your personality.
Well, please. Again, what do you want me to do? I'm always compliment. People only read energy, and it's like, listen to what I'm saying. I'm complimentary. I'm kind. I'll help you if I need to help you.
Right.
It just seems like the joke I've made is like, my problem is I am nice, but I don't seem nice.
Yeah.
And the key to show business is seem nice, but don't be nice.
I think that's a good observation. Like that, I get that too. But people who know me know I'm just a fucking mushy fuck.
Yeah,
and they know that
you'll pick them up.
I'm soft.
You'll pick them up at the airport or
of
whatever.
Course,
you'll
of course.
Bellyache.
But the people that really know me, they're like, you know, like you're just like this hypersensitive softy, really.
Yeah.
But like, you know, some other thing lives out in the world.
Yeah.
And people project onto it. You
yes.
know? Yeah, like I did Taylor Tomlinson's show, and I just was loose. I had a good time. I was cute and charming.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and she's like, you're having fun? I'm like, yeah, it's great. And I'm like, why? What did you think would happen? She said, I thought you'd come on here and shit on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why would I do that? You don't know me.
And then cut to the tape. Cut to the tape. Are you shitting on things?
Throughout half my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. So I've been lucky. It's great. Like, I just think she's great.
That's good. Well, you're ready for it.
Yeah.
Well, look, buddy, I think we did good.
Yeah.
And I love the special. I thought it was great. I watch you and I'm like, that is good. You know?
Thank you, man. That means a lot to me. And it's also, I actually believe you, like 80%.
Yeah.
And
you still annoy me a little.
Sure. How could I not? I am a living person. How could I not annoy a living person? Well, again, you annoy yourself completely.
I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, man. Not about you, but like, here's the one thing that really is killing me.
Uh-huh.
You know, Rock gave me that line.
Mm-hmm.
You know the line. I don't want to burn
don't
the
blow
line.
For the crowd. Chris Rock gave you a joke.
Yeah, he gave me a punch. You know, second tag.
Yeah.
And it kills.
Yep.
And it's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never have thought of it because mm-hmm. I don't have the same cultural, well, you know, I'm not a sponge.
Yeah.
And it just sticks in my head, like, sort of like, what am I? If that one fucking line could get that big a laugh and it came from him, okay, fine, that's why he's great. But like, what the fuck am I doing?
That you didn't think of it?
Well, not that I didn't think of that, but like, how do I broaden my cultural education to include references to
I know, but it's a reference to Seinfeld. It's not like,
no, I know, but
where did he hear of this?
No, but I wouldn't have made the connection.
Oh, that's funny. I've heard the amount of people that have told me jokes they're responsible for in other people's acts.
Yeah,
like, yeah, I bet. I bet he it really made a huge impact on that person.
Yeah, I know guys who gave me tags that changed the game, that changed the bit for me because I don't use them that much. You've given me tags, I've tried them. And he gave me one. Then Rhodes gave me one years ago, and it really was a fucking nice piece. But I remember it because I don't do it that often. I don't take tags that often.
I don't give them that often.
Yeah.
You had one that I thought.
That you gave me?
Yeah, that I was like, I'm pretty sure that'll work, but I don't know if you did it.
Oh, it was about the
Oh, you're on the treadmill.
Oh, right.
You're running.
Right.
So it seems even creepier because it looks like you're chasing after them.
Oh, I didn't. I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
Look
good talking
it.
To you.
Good to see you, buddy.
There you go. Covered a lot. Neil Brennan, Crazy Good, is streaming now on Netflix. Hang out for a minute, folks.
People, if you're subscribed to The Full Marin, that means you have access to every single episode of WTF, which also means you can go back and listen to me and Neil work through an issue we had with each other in front of a live audience at the Vancouver Comedy Festival.
I didn't feel a respect from you. And I'm not saying I deserve fucking rose petals under my feet, which you, that's where your head goes. Your head goes, this motherfucker. That's not... I was like, I just felt like you've had this podcast, you told me you were going to put me on it very early, and then you're just having fucking guest, and I love the podcast, you just have guest after guest after guest.
Although this is a different issue.
No, it's the same one, though.
No, but okay, but so, but this is, there's
I'm
a whole layer
you,
of like,
more insight.
Right, okay, but there's a whole layer of you sitting there going, when's my fucking turn?
Yeah, well, you, uh-huh. Which you should know about. As a guy that's tried to get on television.
Tried. See how he frames things? No, just listen to, listen to what he pushes out there. This is part of the issue.
I've heard you talk about club owners who wouldn't book you as quote unquote evil cocksuckers. So I know that that's when you're being excluded from something, you know there's going to be a visceral reaction. So don't act like you're magnanimous. Like, well, no, they make their choices and we're all adults here.
That's episode 287, and it's available for all Full Marin subscribers. To sign up, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Here's some guitar from the vaults. From the vaults. Monkey, La Fonda, Cat Angels everywhere.